Most conversation you hear today about the coronavirus pandemic that has dominated our news for the past 2 months speaks about recovery. Not only the recovery of those who have contracted the illness, but recovery for our economy and our way of life. Today, we visit with a number of individuals who have been deeply involved in helping local organizations and businesses stay afloat during the pandemic, and who are now helping the community move forward in anticipation of relaxation of restrictions of gatherings and events. Response and recovery in the Chippewa Valley is our focus today on the West Side. Good morning, I'm Dean Kallenbach, and we'll be joined in a few minutes by Dave Miner of the Eau Claire Area Chamber of Commerce, Carrie Kincaid of the nonprofit coalition Together Chippewa Valley, Sue Bornick of the Eau Claire Community Foundation, Karen Hebert of the United Way of the Greater Chippewa Valley, and Elaine Coughlin of the new business startup hub YSIS Venture Home Eau Claire. First, though, we welcome back Wisconsin Public Radio digital content producer Elizabeth Domes-Harder from Eau Claire as we make our weekly check on the COVID-19 situation here in western Wisconsin. Elizabeth Domes-Harder, welcome.
Hi, Dean. It's really nice to be with you.
Good to have you along. You can join the conversation with your question or comment at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. So each week for the past several, we've opened the show with a peek at how the COVID-19 pandemic is playing out here in western Wisconsin. The number of COVID-19 cases confirmed in Wisconsin so far went over the 6,800 mark this week, and the number of deaths statewide went over 300. The northwestern half of the state has seen relatively few cases. For the 16 counties in our western Wisconsin listening area, there have been 142 confirmed cases since the outbreak began. We have seen a rise in deaths to 6 in western Wisconsin, 4 of those coming in Clark County, 1 each in Jackson and Buffalo counties. Burnett and Pepin County still to see their first confirmed case. So, Elizabeth Domes-Harder, with the nice weather starting to come into play, how do you see people interpreting the safer at home order here in western Wisconsin?
Yeah, Dean, I think we're going to see both more and less of the same. So there's been new data that's showing that people in Wisconsin are getting less compliant with social distancing measures. And that's something that folks are calling quarantine fatigue, which I think is rather fitting. There's a geography professor at UW-Madison that my colleague Hope Kerwin spoke with, and he's been looking at cell phone data to track people's movements. So that data is showing that within the past week, there's been increased movement around the state, with exceptions in urban areas like, you know, Dane County and Milwaukee County. And according to his model, in our listener area, Dunn County and Burnett County were the only ones within the past few days to see an increase in mobility. So if people start to move more, I think we're going to see, you know, mask wearing becoming more common. There have been some businesses that have created like a mask policy. Family Fair in Chippewa Falls did that. They're not mandated in Wisconsin, though, like they are in some other states. And recently, the Wisconsin Department of Health Services Deputy Secretary said that she thinks wearing face masks in public will probably become more the norm than the exception. You know, health officials are still warning that the reason we're not seeing the same scenarios as we're seeing in, like, New York, for example, is because social distancing is working. So they're recommending that we continue to do that.
One story that came out this week was a statistic showing that more than 50 people who took part in the April election came down with COVID-19. Much of western and northern Wisconsin has a special election coming up a week from Tuesday to elect the new 7th District Member of Congress. You wrote a story this week about the debate over election rules for 2020, not only for that May 12th election, but also for our primary in August and the general election in November. How will those elections look?
Yeah, so this story was based on comments from Kathy Bernier, who's a Republican senator from Lake Halley, and Mark Miller, who's a Democrat from Monona. And they found some common ground in the discussion over how future elections might look. Bernier said that what happened in Milwaukee in April cannot happen again. And she was referring to, you know, what we saw in pictures of the long lines of people waiting to vote and 180 wards of voters packed into 5 polling places. She said that she, you know, expects to see the same kinds of like plexiglass barriers, other kinds of like PPEs that were used in April to show up again in future elections. They both talked about how absentee voting was a big problem in April's election. And, you know, that was for a couple of reasons. Some people didn't receive their ballots at all. Some got them like really late and other ballots were lost. Miller and Bernier, they both talked about a proposal that had been brought up in the legislature, but it didn't pass. And that was called absentee voting efficiency option. So that proposal would have allowed voters to basically fill out an absentee ballot and submit it to like a counting machine right away. And the whole goal of that would be to help clerks out so that they wouldn't have to count those ballots on election day. And it helps voters too, because they would know right away if they made a mistake and they'd need like a new ballot. So Miller noted that there are like obvious problems with this, though, too, because the counting machines would be unattended. So people might become more suspicious, like about the results. And Miller, he also mentioned another proposal that had failed, and that one would give clerks a chance to count ballots on the Monday before the election. Some of the other things that they talked about were sending every eligible voter an absentee ballot would be a viable option. Bernier said that it'd be really hard to do that, though, because there's so many criteria that need to be met. And it's a process that she estimated would take like at least 2 years to even set up. But Miller was a bit more optimistic about it. And he said, you know, other states have seen success with this and Wisconsin could follow a similar template. The senators both agreed vehemently that any form of online voting would be out of the question, though, because of how vulnerable those results could be to, like, hackers.
Now, Governor Evers' original Safer at Home order went through Memorial Day, or went through last week. Mm-hmm. He extended it last week to go through the Memorial Day weekend, and that first order had bipartisan support. The second one, not so much. Republicans have appealed the order to the state Supreme Court. There was that big demonstration last Friday at the state capitol. Locally, in a story reported by Ryan Urban of the Rice Lake Chronotype, the Rice Lake City Council this week passed a resolution that would allow local businesses to reopen earlier than the governor's order. So, Liz, you did a story this week about a plan for reopening being developed by the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. What does that plan look like compared to what Governor Evers is asking of us all?
Yeah, so I'll kind of start with Governor Evers' plan, his Badger bounce back plan that came out on Monday. It's sort of a roadmap for safely relaxing social distancing requirements. That plan like gives guidance to how we'll be able to get back to normal to a certain extent, and it's divided into 3 phases. So phase 1 would allow gatherings of up to 10 people. Restaurants would be reopen, but they'd have to follow social distancing guidelines. Some restrictions on retailers would be lifted, and K-12 school child care centers would reopen at a full capacity. But it's worth noting that phase 1 potentially is weeks away at a minimum. And then, you know, phase 2 would allow gatherings of up to 50 people, and phase 3 would basically mean that all businesses and gatherings could resume. There are certain things that need to be met, though, in order for those phases to be implemented. So the state would need to see, you know, 14 days of reductions in new infections with flu-like symptoms, a 14-day decline in positive COVID-19 cases as a like percentage of all those tests. And then throughout the phases, the state also has to make sure that everyone in Wisconsin who has symptoms of COVID-19 has access to a lab test. So with that all being said, and everyone trying to make sense of it, the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, which is the state's largest business organization, released a proposal called the Back to Business Plan on Friday, and that you know, calls for businesses across the state to reopen on Monday, this coming Monday. So there's a few caveats to that proposal, and businesses would essentially they'd be assigned like a risk level based on certain criteria. So that would include like the type of business that they are, county infection rates in the county where they're located, and like the hospital capacity in the area to care for those folks. So the levels would be minimal, moderate, or substantial based on that risk. and businesses would have to put like a notice, you know, on their front door or on their window to alert employees and staff of those risk levels. Excuse me. The higher the risk level, though, there are more precautions that the businesses would have to follow. And local health departments would be in charge of enforcing those restrictions. So I spoke with Lisa Geezy, and she's the director of the Eau Claire City County Health Department. And she's like, you know, I'm not sure that that's the best way to protect folks, because this, you know, this plan would essentially kind of put the onus on health departments to police it, but there's no infrastructure in place on how to do that. So she had some real valid concerns about it. The WMC said that they will continue to advocate for the plan being enacted into law even after, like, the deadline that they set of Monday.
And Dave Miner of the Chamber of Commerce, who's one of our guests later on, will talk a little bit about the experience that the Chamber had. The Eau Claire Area Chamber of Commerce actually had a virtual town hall meeting yesterday talking about that back-to-business plan from WMC. So I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say about that. Talking to Elizabeth Domes-Harder. She's a digital content producer for Wisconsin Public Radio based here in Eau Claire. Liz, one story you're working on involves a group of essential workers we might not think a lot about unless they're missing, and then we notice them quite substantially, and those are garbage haulers. How is this pandemic affecting what's already something of a dangerous profession?
So this story is fascinating, and I'm still in the process of writing it, but one of the people who I spoke with was Melissa Johnson, and she's chair of the Wisconsin County's Solid Waste Management Association, and she runs a waste management facility in Ringgold, which is pretty close to the Wausau area. And her department provides services for customers in 18 counties in Wisconsin. And she said that the industry has always used good safety protocols. Excuse me. And she said that, you know, one of the most interesting things that she said to me was that household waste is some of the most dangerous waste that they're ever going to have to handle. Huh. Which I thought was just fascinating. And she kind of explained that waste materials come in a couple of different categories. So you've got solid waste, and that's basically like all the kinds of waste that we produce from our living. And then there's hazardous waste, which has to do with whether it's like, you know, volatile or flammable and toxic. And then there's infectious and medical waste, and that is sent to like treatment facilities to get taken care of before it's been put in a landfill. So there are different rules that apply for all of these categories. But the interesting thing is that households are exempt from all hazardous and infectious waste requirements. So basically that means that, like, you and your household, you can throw out basically any of the waste that you produce on site. And so Johnson gave the example of, like, let's say you move into a house and you find a bag of DDT in the garage. And DDT, you know, obviously has been banned for years, but you're actually not obligated by the law to dispose of that properly. And that's like not to say that you shouldn't. You should always find alternative means to do that. But it was just kind of interesting. So all of that now is compounded by COVID. So we don't fully understand yet, like, how it lives on cardboard, how it lives on plastic, or like the tissue, you know, that's full of mucus that we throw away. So it just makes everybody a lot more cautious and anxious, really, because, you know, these haulers have to go home and they have families and they're worried about whether they're contagious. So what that looks like then, you know, these safety precautions that they've been taking is basically stopping some of the services that waste management staff might have previously done. So, for example, Johnson said that sometimes people will throw things in the garbage that shouldn't be there. So like computers, microwaves, TVs. And in the past, Johnson said her staff might have taken like a rake, you know, or a hoe or something out into the landfill and try to grab those items, get them out of the landfill and put them in recycling. But with COVID, Johnson said that's not allowed anymore. She's like, I cannot risk my staff getting infected by like touching any of that stuff. And surprisingly, she said that items like that end up in the landfill every day. So she said that, you know, they're treating everything as though it has potential to cause harm to the staff. It was kind of neat because Johnson said that she and her colleagues, you know, they do their jobs beautifully. That was her word. And she said garbage is unsafe. And that's like obviously why we get rid of it. And it just sort of magically disappears mm-hmm. and we don't have to think about it. But she's like, there's a double-edged sword to that, you know, because people need to understand the impact of their choices. she said that haulers and waste management folks are kind of like at the end of the line. And the big decision, the big impact to all of this are really made by the consumers. So what can we do? She said that we need to make sure that our garbage is fully bagged and secured. If you don't know what to recycle or throw away, your city and county websites are the best resource for you. They have tons of information on what you can and can't recycle. And recyclemorewisconsin.org also has a ton of really great information.
Just when you thought you heard every angle on this story, you hear a new one. Any idea when our listeners can find your story? You mentioned you're in progress in writing that one. When will we see that on WPR.org?
Yeah, if all goes well, I'm hoping that it will be published this weekend. I'll be writing that one up today. But really, anyone can find any stories related to COVID-19 on our website. So all you have to do is type in WPR.org/COVID, and it'll bring them all up. I think our last count showed we had more than 400 and probably close to 450 items related to COVID. That's, you know, stories, that's talk shows, that's news articles. The list goes on. So there's a lot of stuff to dig through there.
So we don't recommend that you read them all at once, but they're there if you
probably
need them.
Probably not.
And the other thing you can do is sign up. There, we do have a newsletter that comes out twice a day that has our top stories in it. You can sign up for that. It comes right to your email box. Elizabeth Domes-Harder, digital journalist for Wisconsin Public Radio based in Eau Claire. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for the opportunity, Dean.
We spend the rest of the hour talking about community response to the pandemic here in the Chippewa Valley as businesses and nonprofits struggle to survive. We hear from a number of community leaders who are deeply involved in those efforts and working on strategies for recovery. Your comments and questions, welcome as always. Has your business or nonprofit been hammered by the pandemic? What's your strategy for survival and recovery? Email your thoughts to ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Or you can call us at 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615, to join the conversation. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and this is The West Side on the Ideas Network. We're back on The West Side. Our focus for the remainder of the hour is the health and well-being of organizations and businesses in western Wisconsin in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. We'll hear later from Elaine Coughlin, who will tell us about a pilot project in Eau Claire to provide an incubator for six new businesses that has started this spring. And we'll also hear from Karen Hebert and Sue Bornick with a report on the Quick Response Community Fund that's handed out more than $250,000 to local nonprofits in the past month. Right now and through the rest of the hour, I'd like to welcome Carrie Kincaid, the former Eau Claire City Council president, is serving as a spokesperson for a new coalition of nonprofits called Together Chippewa Valley. Carrie Kincaid, welcome to the West Side.
Thank you for having me, Dean.
And also here for the rest of the hour is Dave Miner. He's president and CEO of the Eau Claire Area Chamber of Commerce. Dave Miner, good to have you with us today.
Thank you. Good morning to you, too.
So, Dave Miner, I'd like to start with you. As you connect with your membership, what are the overriding themes that these business people are sharing with you?
We could spend the next 3 weeks, I think, going through that whole conversation.
Give me a summary.
You know, almost all of them are, you know, going through phases right now, first of confusion, what's going on, so much information, can we boil it down, what do I need to do, how do I do it? I would say the two biggest pieces that are consistent, and I've lost track of the number of hundreds of businesses, both members and just businesses in general in our area, they want to know how do they protect their employees and their customers, and how can they open what they have a very strong passion for, and that is their business. When you look at small business owners, these are not people who just woke up one day and decided, I got nothing else to do, so I'm going to do this. They have a passion for what they do. And whether that's from a small gym to a restaurant to a bar to somebody making fabric, whatever it may be, that is their love, that is their passion, and they want to get back to that. But I've not talked to one single business who has said, I want to put anybody in danger or in harm to get there. So, again, all of them are saying, tell me how I protect my customers. How do I protect my staff? Let us get back to what we're doing. And unfortunately, this discussion is starting to become politicized and it shouldn't be, because this isn't, it's not all one side or the other. We have to figure out, as everybody has been saying, is how do we start dialing this up?
For those businesses that are hurting, what help has the chamber been providing?
I would say for the first 3.5-4 weeks, we have really been focused on trying to take the 3 to 5 fire hoses that get pointed at us, boiling that information down and distributing that to all businesses. As you mentioned, we had our 7th virtual town hall meeting yesterday. We've been trying to keep that as current as we possibly can. We've been averaging about 300 to 350 people on those calls. Again, so what I have challenged Scott Rogers to do, and anybody that knows Scott knows how great of a job he does, is take all this information and simplify it so that business who doesn't have an HR director, an in-house counsel, and all these people to help them filter through this, how do we simplify it for them to be able to understand what steps do I need to take? And, you know, for us, my biggest frustration is when a small business, we show them what to do, and then either to a computer glitch or whatever, they can't get through the process. And then they're like, well, that didn't. So what do I do? So it is hard, but we have been trying to do our best to filter all of the information in an intelligible way that people can then act on it.
I want to shift now to Kerry Kincaid to talk about the new group, Together Chippewa Valley. First, Kerry Kincaid, tell us about the group. How and why was it formed? Kerry Kincaid, are you with us? Okay, I think we've lost Kerry Kincaid. So if you can ring her up, that would be great.
Oh, here I am.
Oh, there she is. Never mind. She's here. She's here.
We got lost in virtual space somewhere.
Oh, okay. Well, that does happen. Anyway, the question I had is just tell us about Together Chippewa Valley. This is a group that's been formed since the pandemic started affecting our lives. What's it all about?
Sure. If you would allow me, Dean, I just want to start out by expressing my gratitude for frontline workers in our country who have kept us safe and kept us going. I hope they feel the gratitude of a grateful country behind them.
Mm-hmm.
And also for the local effort to contain, prevention is very hard work. We've been doing a really good job, as Mr. Miner said, working together. And Together Chippewa Valley is in that vein of working together. Several larger nonprofits, I guess, went for a walk and came up with an idea of connecting nonprofits in a little kind of a grassroots coalition. I believe it is unique such that the fundraising is coming from the group efforts, A, and B. There's a connection and a comfort and a voice, sharing a voice between the coalition members, which they hope will carry on even after this epidemic subsides. So it's a unique little effort that has raised over $100,000 in its energy. It connects nonprofits across a wide spectrum, from animal shelters to family resource to theater and arts and health. And all of the proceeds, it has an end date, not a monetary goal. It has an end date of May 31st, at which time all of the proceeds will be divided equally amongst the partners. They felt very strongly about that expression of cooperation amongst them and asked me to be a spokesperson, which, of course, I'm extremely proud and happy to do.
The missions of nonprofit organizations do run the gamut, from performing venues to animal shelters, which we're getting a live demonstration of, to health and human services. What types of organizations have become part of the Together Chippewa Valley Coalition?
To date, there are 19 organizations. I won't list them all, but they do range from sheltering animals like Bob's House for Dogs and both humane associations, the Family Resource Center, Pablo Center at the Confluence, the museum, Chippewa Valley Theater Guild, the YMCA, Community Table, Fierce Freedom, a sculpture tour, Boy Scouts, and Family Promise. I haven't hit them all, but you're right.
The
range
variety,
of services that are provided is pretty comforting and respectful.
So the decision was made to divvy up the money equally among all the nonprofits. Some of the profits are idle during the pandemic. Others are busier than usual, providing services to more people who need them. Is that creating any special challenges as far as this this coalition is concerned?
It is not. Each partner signed a memorandum of understanding, and they join Eyes Wide Open and have remained a supportive coalition throughout. The memorandum of understanding does ask that the funds that are distributed will help operations. And of course, nonprofits operations is their main cost, since not many have a large capital expense, perhaps except the theaters, of course. I wanted to say and emphasize again that they signed the memorandum Eyes Wide Open and are getting through this together on what is a really admirable equality.
Later on in the hour, we're going to hear about another effort to help nonprofits in our area with more immediate, quick response relief, and that's coming up a little bit later on. We're listening right now to the voice you just heard, Carrie Kincaid, who's a spokesperson for Together Chippewa Valley, a new coalition of nonprofit organizations helping those organizations through the pandemic, and also Dave Miner. Dave is the president and CEO of the Eau Claire Area Chamber of Commerce. Dave Miner, our reporter Elizabeth Domes-Harder talked earlier in the hour about the proposal from the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce Group designed to open the economy back up. The chamber sponsored a town hall meeting yesterday, virtually, of course, to discuss their back-to-business plan. What did you hear in that session?
Well, we actually heard last Friday, we were given a preview of the plan. And when you really look at it, it is very credible, well thought out, but also a very simple way for businesses to help identify how can they reopen, what do they need to do. What's nice about this plan is that it is using data. It is using it from the Department of Health and Human Services. It is using it from the health associations across the state, but it takes the ability for regions, areas to take a look and say, can they reopen before someone else? And so again, just as we are doing on a national level where the federal government is saying, we're not going to wait for every state to open all at the same time, I think throughout the state of Wisconsin, this is what we have been asking for and what we've been starting to have conversations with our area legislators is how can businesses open, and again, do it by protecting their employees, protecting their customers, and do it in a very responsible way. So if you go to our website or go to WMC's website, you can see the model. As a business, you would go in, place your business name, place the county you are in, and then your NAICS code. Every business has one, and it gives you, it's very simple. But it's taking the information and comparing it to those criteria, to those numbers that we need to know, how many cases, everything, how many hospital beds, how many respirators, all of that for our area, and not looking at it from a different state, a different region. One of the other nice things about it is that each business, as you do this, that per se, yes, you can open and do this, that only lasts for about 7 to 8 days. You would need to do this weekly because we know as a country, as we reopen, there are going to be some spikes. So everybody would have to stay current with this, but it's really a very credible, when you look at who WMC reached out to get this done. They reached out to all the different segmented groups, the Restaurant Association, the Tavern League, the Meat Packers. Everybody had input to what does your sector of businesses need to reopen. And then again, a lot of input from the healthcare industry in our state, from Department of Health and Human Services. So from what I've seen, not just within the state, but nationally, I think it's absolutely the best plan that is out there right now.
We've been hearing from Dave Miner of the Eau Claire Area Chamber of Commerce and from Carrie Kincaid of the new nonprofit coalition Together Chippewa Valley about efforts to help existing businesses and organizations survive the pandemic and economic downturn it's caused. But in the past month, six entrepreneurs began a process to get new businesses off the ground in Eau Claire. They're part of the first cohort of YSIS Venture Home, Wisconsin. It's a new startup hub and seed accelerator. YSIS is a nonprofit supporting the University of Wisconsin System's efforts to encourage inventors and new businesses. In Eau Claire, the pilot program is based at CoLab, a co-working space in downtown Eau Claire. Elaine Coughlin is the community manager for CoLab, and earlier this week she told me that YSIS Venture Home Eau Claire provides new businesses with resources and toolkits and provides connections within the business community of Eau Claire.
So YSIS Venture Home Eau Claire is a pilot program that will be programmed through CoLab. So essentially the program is helping entrepreneurs in our city specifically in connecting them to resources or providing them with toolkits and just be a connection for them to help them start their business here in Eau Claire. So this program is looking to fill any gaps currently within the city. We have many organizations, especially ones that offer free services. So we're not looking to duplicate any of that. This program is looking to fill any of those gaps and then ideally help scale these businesses. So we're looking to bring people looking to start businesses and make them as big as they possibly want them to be.
Considering the hammering the economy is taking due to the pandemic, did you consider at all putting off this first cohort that started this month?
We did, because one of the big benefits of this program is that, you know, we take six participants at a time, and the idea is that they can work together and kind of feed off of each other's energy. And to do that, a lot of the time you need to be in person. So as part of the program, you get a free membership to CoLab. You get a flex membership for the 6 months that you're in the program. And the idea is that you get to work together, bounce ideas off of each other, and just be present together. So we did consider it, but we didn't want to delay because a lot of these people have started these businesses and they're looking to keep growing. They don't want to be put on pause. So with that being said, we just decided to do everything virtually, and that has been working out very well. We've had group meetups through Zoom, and we've done other sprint working sessions through Zoom as well, and then just lots of meetings and connecting them with resources, with all of them virtual. And it seems to be going well. They seem to be getting a lot out of it so far. So we did consider it, but just because of timelines where people are with their businesses, we knew we had to keep pushing forward. So we've done the best we can to make it valuable through the virtual sphere.
Tell us about this first group and how they were selected.
Yeah, so we have a steering committee made up of 8 people that are part of the entrepreneur ecosystem here in Eau Claire. They're all professionals. We have people who run small businesses. We have people part of the university system. We have people in technology. We try to cover a lot of those industries. And then together with their expertise, they work as a committee and help guide each of the participants. So the idea is that they each get one-on-one time with someone from the steering committee as their advisor, and then the committee as a whole is looking to help each of them as well.
And who are these folks, and what are their businesses?
So everyone part of this first cohort is mostly from the Eau Claire area. We do have one student who's not currently in Eau Claire just due to the pandemic, but everyone else is located here in Eau Claire. So we have Jim McDougall, and his company is called Upstream AV. We have Brian Graff, who is with Solar Forma. We have Eric Bowd, who's with Lifeline. We have Aaron Akala, who's with Allo Applications. We have Beth Krull, who's with The Hippie Banker, and Mary Kate McManaman with Spark Convos LLC.
Elaine Coughlin is community manager for CoLab, a co-working space in Eau Claire that is host to YSIS Venture Home Eau Claire, a pilot accelerator for startup businesses. Its first six businesses began working together in the past month. Our guests for the remainder of the hour are Dave Miner of the Eau Claire Area Chamber of Commerce and Kerry Kincaid representing the group Together Chippewa Valley, a nonprofit coalition. How do you see the road to recovery for the culture and economy of the Chippewa Valley? Join us by phone at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on the West Side talking about community response and recovery from the pandemic here in the Chippewa Valley. Our guests today are Kerry Kincaid of the Coalition of Nonprofits Together Chippewa Valley and Dave Miner, the president and CEO of the Eau Claire Area Chamber of Commerce. With all the pain that social distancing and eliminating gatherings has caused, there's been very little spread of COVID-19 in evidence in western Wisconsin. Dave Miner, how important is it to the business community to keep those positive tests low?
Critical. Because again, that, you know, that is what everybody is starting or is looking, I shouldn't say starting to, but has been looking at what is the impact here? How does that compare us to everywhere else? But again, as I've said several times, I've not talked to a business who wants to put anybody in danger. So the lower we can keep those numbers, the sooner we can start dialing everybody up to getting back to business. Because again, unfortunately, we're going to lose some businesses here. That's here and across the state, across the country. But we need to get our economy back open again. We need, you know, to start moving things along. So the lower we can keep those numbers, the more we can take those precautions are critical for everybody.
Now, the chamber has decided, the board of directors of the chamber has decided to take a leadership role in an initiative that's really looking toward a task force, really, that's looking toward taking the community to the other side of this pandemic. Can you talk a little bit about the chamber's involvement and what that task force is all about?
Absolutely. We actually have our first, all of the chairs are getting together. We have our first meeting today at noon. And this was developed by Dale Pointer and Dale Peters from the city and a few people that he had reached out to, including the chamber, to talk about what would it look like, what are people going to need. There was a lot of conversation about, you know, who to reach out to, all of that. We felt we have two very, very good co-chairs, being one, Mark Faunus, two, Greg Moore. Both have excellent reputations in this community. But in essence, the task force is really there to help all different sectors get reopened. Because again, every business, every different type of business or so is going to have to do things differently. That's the one size fits all doesn't work for anybody in this case whatsoever. So again, we want to reach out to those industry specific groups. What are you telling people? How do you do it? And so right now, I think we're looking at the initial stage of this task force, really dealing with a lot of questions from people. What do I need to do? And everybody, matter of fact, this morning, they just added another subgroup to the business thing. So it's, in its essence, it's about how do we take a lot of great volunteers. One thing that the Chippewa Valley can hang its hat on is the strong reputation of collaboration, of working together to help everybody get through something. And that's what this is all about. So it's taking the sectors, letting people who do things really well, taking their expertise and saying, you do this, you do that, and we all come together and make it work. We're actually going to have our town hall meeting next Wednesday for the chamber at 10 a.m. We'll focus on where the task force is at, what have we completed, what steps have been completed, I should say, and then what are those next steps? How can people get involved? How can they reach us if they have questions? We've had an independent website set up that isn't tied to anybody, but it's there to really be that focal point through this task force for people to go to get that most critical up-to-date information.
Kerry Kincaid, a number of the nonprofits within Together Chippewa Valley are cultural organizations that rely on patrons to come through the door to attend events. Will those types of organizations be the most vulnerable to surviving the pandemic and what's bound to be some added caution when it comes to crowds?
Yeah, that's a topic that many are talking about. In the current setting and for the last month, their operations really have been at risk from the loss of earned income sometimes in ticket sales, for example. Fundraisers have been canceled. They're worried about transfers of government funding, which come not only from the state but from the city of Eau Claire, worried about what that would look like in the future. And, of course, they're concerned about the mental health and physical health of their staff and challenges that they're all feeling together there. Just the same. A nonprofit is a business, too, and just feeling so many of those challenges. But they're also talking about, well, what is it going to look like? Many people have used the term, I guess, a new normal. It's hard to define yet, but they're looking at some concrete ideas together. They meet every week and share ideas and help each other and sometimes vent a little bit, I think. So the museum, for example, is working on digitizing its collection, which is something that it's wanted to do for quite some time, but now has the impetus and the need as they consider that there may not be as many visitors through the door as there was at least for the next foreseeable few months, perhaps. But that's a way for the Chippewa Valley to share its history with now, I guess, with the world. So they're already thinking ahead about how to change operations. Some are worried about the number of volunteers they rely on to keep their operations going, whether the volunteers will.
Oh, I think we've lost our connection with Carrie Kincaid. Carrie Kincaid is with Together Chippewa Valley, a new coalition of broad array of nonprofits, ranging from arts groups to social service organizations. Another relief effort for nonprofits has sprung from a different partnership of long-established organizations. The Eau Claire Community Foundation and United Way of the Greater Chippewa Valley have teamed up to create the COVID-19 Quick Response Community Fund. The new fund has given out more than $250,000 in the past month or so to a number of nonprofits, 42 in fact, with the primary focus of those being providing food, shelter, and medical care. Earlier this week, I talked with Karen Hebert, the interim executive director of United Way of the Greater Chippewa Valley, and Sue Bornick, executive director of the Eau Claire Community Foundation, and I asked Sue Bornick what triggered that partnership.
Well, in working with my community, other community foundation partners in the state of Wisconsin, they were already starting to collaborate with United Way and had some wonderful ideas. So I immediately picked up the phone and called the United Way of the Greater Chippewa Valley and said, this is something, let's talk about this and what can we do together to help support our community.
Now, normally we think of the Community Foundation of managing grants that are given annually. We hear about the big announcements. Is this style of emergency relief something new for the foundation?
It is new for the foundation. We've never really have had an emergency situation in Eau Claire, though it could happen. We have supported with donations when the tornado was up north through Barron and that area, but we haven't had anything this close to home.
So, Karen Hebert, you just became interim director of United Way of the Chippewa Valley, but you have a long history of involvement with nonprofits in the area. How does the effect of this pandemic compare to other economic downturns we've experienced in the past as it relates to nonprofits?
Well, it's global nature, and the very disturbing, disrupting aspect that we don't know who's going to be affected. So we have some people who overnight became everyday heroes. A bus driver is a hero. People working in assisted living are heroes in a new way, right? In a new way, and and their families are at risk. And then we have all of our musicians and wait staff and people in the arts that suddenly their livelihood is at risk, and maybe for a long, long time. So the fact that it's global and that we cannot predict who's vulnerable, those two things are really disturbing.
So let's shift to the actual COVID-19 Quick Response Community Fund. Karen Hebert, which organizations are benefiting from these relief funds?
Well, the good news is that it's broad. The Community Foundation's perspective has always been broad, but United Way, of course, is Human Services. And we have so many wonderful expert volunteers engaged in United Way efforts on an everyday basis. So the fact that we operate for Health and Human Services all the time, I think, lends some credibility when people are looking to us for assistance in targeting donations. So while the Community Foundation is broadly looking, the people that are serving the folks that are most at risk are generally Health and Human Services, not exclusively, but generally, and so we can really help along those lines. So it's broad, but the services to the vulnerable are mostly Human Services.
That's Karen Hebert of United Way of the Greater Chippewa Valley. We also heard from Sue Bornick from the Eau Claire Community Foundation. Those two organizations combined to create a Quick Response Community Fund, which was announced yesterday, has given out $274,000 in grants to 42 organizations in the past 4 weeks. And those two organizations, that fund now has done its is completed phase one. They're looking at phase two, where they'll pivot to more of a recovery mode. We're back with our guests, Carrie Kincaid and Dave Miner. Carrie, do we have you back? No, it appears we've lost Carrie for the program. Dave Miner, let's wrap up. We've got a couple minutes left. Other than involvement in the Community-Wide Economic Recovery Task Force, what sorts of things will the Eau Claire Area Chamber of Commerce be doing in the coming weeks to support its members?
Again, we're focusing on right now both workforce and advocacy, and trying to, again, take a look at what are our members, what are businesses in general throughout the Eau Claire Chippewa Valley area going to need. And one of those things is workforce is a big item. You know, before all of this, you know, we had record unemployment for, you know, over a year and a half. And so as we come out of this, we're already starting to ask the questions, what will our members need? What do we need to have in place for them to, are they rehiring everybody? Are they going to retool? You know, again, everybody's been talking about this new normal. We don't know what that looks like. So we're trying to anticipate, how do we put procedures in place to help all businesses take a look at, if you're not going back to where you were, what are some other opportunities? What are some other careers? We're working right now with CVTC to take a look at a lot of the careers that they train for. You know, again, if we look at those essential jobs that took place over the last month, month and a half, a lot of those careers, a lot of those opportunities, you can go to CVTC and get training for. And so we're trying to look ahead, do our best with that crystal ball and say, where can we place ourselves that are best going to serve all of the businesses across the spectrum here in the, excuse me, here in the Chippewa Valley area.
Thank you, Dave Miner. Carrie Kincaid, I think we've got you back for a second. Quickly, can you tell us if people, Giving Tuesday is coming up this Tuesday, can you tell us how people could contribute to Together Chippewa Valley?
Sure. Thank you for welcoming me back. Together Chippewa Valley has a website, togetherchippewavalley.org, one word. There's a donate button. You can also mail a donation to Visit Eau Claire, who is our fiscal agent. And that address is also on the website. I wanted to say thank you to the people who spoke today also. It does exemplify that we do know how to work together in the Chippewa Valley. It's something I hope that we're very proud of and will rely on in the months to come.
Thank you, Carrie Kincaid. Dave Miner also with us from the Eau Claire Area Chamber of Commerce. Kate Spranger took the calls and manages publicity for the West Side. Thanks to her. And don't forget, Monday night, this station has the debate in the 7th Congressional District. I'm Dean Kallenbeck. This is The West Side.